Today on Inside Politics, welcome to the general election. The two parties' choices, whether you like it or not, are Joe Biden and Donald Trump. The 2020 rematch is now effectively a done deal after Nikki Haley made this announcement this morning.
The time has now come to suspend my campaign. I said I wanted Americans to have their voices heard. I have done that. I have no regrets. And although I will no longer be a candidate, I will not stop using my voice for the things I believe in.
The question now, where will Haley voters go? Both Biden and Trump are making a play for their support with very different strategies. I'm Dana Bash. Let's go behind the headlines and inside politics. First up, today is day one of what will likely be a bitter and grueling 244-day general election. An 81-year-old incumbent president versus his 77-year-old predecessor. Donald Trump was able to secure his spot as the presumptive Republican nominee for the third time in a row, just 51 days after the first votes were cast, and now he's one step closer to pulling off something that hasn't happened in 130 years. Grover Cleveland was the only president to win non-consecutive terms. CNN's Kylie Atwood is in Charleston, South Carolina, where Nikki Haley just announced that she was suspending her presidential campaign. Kylie, you've been doing amazing reporting on what has been going on behind the scenes. What can you tell us now?
Listen, Nikki Haley said that she has no regrets. She's full of gratitude. And she said that she is suspending her campaign, although she feels good about what she was able to do here. It's important to note that she has ramped up her criticism of former President Trump over the course of the final stretch here of this campaign, at one point calling him toxic, at another point saying that he wasn't qualified to be president because she wouldn't trust him to protect U.S. service members overseas. So it's not altogether surprising that when she came out and announced the end of her campaign today, she also did not come out and endorse former President Trump today. She left the door open to potentially endorsing him ahead of the general election in November, but she essentially said the onus is on him to make the case to the voters who have supported her. Listen to what she said.
It is now up to Donald Trump to earn the votes of those in our party and beyond it who did not support him. And I hope he does that. At its best, politics is about bringing people into your cause, not turning them away. And our conservative cause badly needs more people. This is now his time for choosing.
Now, Nikki Haley only won two states as part of the primary process, Washington, D.C., and last night, Vermont. But her campaign has repeatedly pointed out that there is a faction of the electorate that is siding with her in her vision, and she is trying to now play up the leverage that she has on those voters, putting herself into a position of power, even though she is stepping down and ending her candidacy today. And it's important to note, Dana, that she very clearly said that even though she is no longer going to be running for president, she is going to continue to use her voice for the issues that she cares about. One of them, she said, was the need to stand with U.S. allies, calling that just incredibly important. Dana?
And such a classic issue that really does show a deep divide in the Trump Republican Party and the more traditional party that Nikki Haley espouses. Thank you so much, Kylie. And this is the message that the Trump campaign put out after Nikki Haley's announcement. It said, it was a hard-fought race, but now it's time for us to unite as a party and defeat Joe Biden. Donald Trump, the person, his own message was, shall we say, off message. CNN's Kristen Holmes is in Palm Beach, Florida. Kristen, this is sort of rinse and repeat. There's the campaign, and then there's the candidate.
Yeah, it's not surprising what we heard from the former president, particularly as Kylie just laid out. He had been attacked by Nikki Haley. He was on offense. And we were told going into this speech that Nikki Haley was not going to endorse him. And I was told by advisors that they believed she was going to go out there and trash him. But before she even got through her speech, in which she asked Donald Trump to earn the votes of Republicans that didn't support him, he posted this on social media. He said, Nikki Haley got trounced last night in record-setting fashion, despite the fact that Democrats, for reasons unknown, are allowed to vote in Vermont and various other Republican primaries. Much of her money came from radical left Democrats, as did many of her voters, almost 50% according to the polls. At this point, I hope she stays in the race and fights it out until the end. I'd like to thank my family, friends, and the great Republican Party for helping me produce by far the most successful Super Tuesday in history, and would further like to invite all of the Haley supporters to join the greatest movement in the history of our nation. Biden is the enemy. He's destroying our country. Make America great again. So he starts by saying that Haley's supporters and donors are Democrats. He's also said that anybody who donates to Haley was not somebody who he wanted donating to him. And then he ends with saying, if Nikki Haley's supporters want to support him, he welcomes them. This was then sent out by the campaign, and this is why I'm pointing this out, in a note that said Donald Trump's statement before Haley's speech, which indicates to me there might be something else coming, because this was not sent out before Haley's speech. This was sent out in the middle of a speech, and I am told that he was watching this speech, knew it was happening at the time. But I think we might see something else, another turn of the wheel here, because Dana, as we have said time and time again, both Biden and Trump going into this, every single vote is going to count in a general election. And that includes those Nikki Haley supporters.
Yeah, the turn of the wheel will probably go about 180 degrees, is my sense. Kristen, thank you so much for that reporting. There is so much to discuss today. And here with me is an all-star panel, CNN and Bloomberg's Nia Malika Henderson, CNN's Jeff Zeleny, and Amy Walter of the Cook Political Report. I told you all, I want you to sort of just kind of open up your brains and spill out the biggest takeaway. Our viewers have been listening to this, and we'll get into some of the nitty-gritty in a second, but kind of the big picture of what this means in the body politic going forward.
Well, now we're serious. The rematch really is on starting today, and 244 some odd days until the final election day. The voting comes earlier, but look, I think the biggest thing I'm struck by as you look at all the maps above the primaries are the coalitions. There's work to do on both sides in terms of rebuilding their fraying coalition. On the Biden side, that is clear as we see the uncommitted votes in Minnesota again last night, joining Michigan last week and other places. That's just one slice of the coalition he has to rebuild. But he has to do the same with progressives, young voters, Latino voters, black voters, others. But Donald Trump also has to rebuild his coalition, the Republican coalition. I talked to so many voters out there this year who voted for him once, twice. Some may do it a third time. Others simply don't know. Mm-hmm. So I think that is what we'll have our eye on going forward for the next 8 months. What about those people who don't know? We call them Nikki Haley voters now. They're not all Nikki Haley voters, and she doesn't own them. They'll do different things. But some said they're going to vote third party. Some said they're not going to vote. Others have to be sort of wooed in. So her comments are this morning. Now's a time for his choosing. The burden is on him. It's not her burden.
I thought that's a very, very good point. Look, you mentioned in the open, this is the third time Donald Trump now is a presumptive nominee, but he enters this race in stronger shape than he's ever been in his political career. You know, think back where he was in 2016. He didn't win a majority in any of those states in the primaries or in the caucuses. The party was deeply divided. 2020, he came into that race behind Joe Biden. And at this point in 2020, he was trailing by about 4 or 5 points. Today, he's got a party behind him, clearly. And yes, I do agree with Jeff that those Haley voters are going to be important, but there are far fewer of them than there were in 2016 who are really debating this. And Joe Biden is a much weaker candidate than he was in 2020. So this race starts in a very different place than the rematch, than it did in 2020. The rematch looks very different.
Yeah, and at this point, I think voters are really ready for this reality, right? It had been sort of—
Are they, though?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they got to be ready, right? At this point, yeah, they don't have a choice. Yeah. This is what has been presented over the last couple of months as the likelihood. So this is what's going to happen. They have seen these candidates. I mean, I was telling Amy in the green room, it feels like we've been covering this, certainly Donald Trump, since 2015. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be one of the most expensive, the most expensive presidential campaign that we've ever seen. And I think one big question is, are we sort of in the middle of a great resorting of the parties, right? Mm-hmm. This great sort of realignment where more downscale sort of working class voters are more likely to vote Republican, and that's across demographics, and then a sort of sorting to the Democratic side of more upscale voters, suburban white voters, college-educated voters. And those are sort of, I think, the Nikki Haley voters. And we'll see what happens with that. But this is going to be a down and dirty race. So much money is going to be flooded. These, you know, a handful of states, right, these swing states. And we'll see if Donald Trump can flip them or if Biden will keep them in his column.
One of the factors, one of the many factors, but maybe one of the most important factors that Donald Trump is facing this time around that he wasn't in the other two races is criminal charges.
Absolutely.
And court case after court case that he's facing. And it was striking in the exit polls that we saw last night. These are questions that were asked of Nikki Haley's voters, specifically about whether or not they're satisfied. They would be satisfied as Trump is the nominee. Only 19% said yes, believe Trump is fit to serve in if convicted. 17%. Now, that might look like a pretty low percentage, but if you think about what that could mean in, let's just take North Carolina and Virginia, particularly Virginia, for example. Well, I think North Carolina is probably the better example. If those people don't show up for Donald Trump, Joe Biden could win a state like North Carolina.
Sure, he could. I think a couple caveats in there. Could he be convicted? I mean, we have no idea if any of these court cases are ever going to get to that point. If I was a betting person as an old courthouse reporter, I would say no. I mean, that seems to be where it's going. But you mentioned wild cards. Boy, I cannot think of a presidential race with more wild cards, from the third party candidates to the individual health and sort of stature of both candidates to all of the criminal cases. So we're going to reset, have to take our breath and see how this shapes out. But I do think it's an important opening here for the Biden campaign, and they're going to try and seize upon it. I mean, they have a lot of vulnerabilities, but their biggest task above all, of course, is to try and make this not about Joe Biden, but to make it about Donald Trump, about his negatives. And there's a lot that helps them in that respect. But again, the criminal charges has helped Donald Trump consolidate the Republican base, unlike we've ever seen in his two other races, as Amy was pointing out.
And it's a very different frame in a general election.
Right.
There's consolidating the base, and then there's getting people who don't like that and other things about Donald Trump, which is why the Biden campaign, I mean, they had basically their finger on the send button the minute she started to speak. Right. This is a statement. Donald Trump made it clear he doesn't want Nikki Haley supporters. I want to be clear. There is a place for them in my campaign. I know that Democrats and Republicans and independents disagree on many issues and hold strong convictions. That's a good thing. That's what America stands for. And then he went on to say, this is what makes me love America. Vote Biden.
The end. You know, Nia put her finger on it, talking about the sort of realignment of the coalitions. But it doesn't take a big realignment. It literally takes like 5,000 voters and a handful of state of realignment. And so every single one of these voters who fits into that category in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Arizona matters a lot, and a lot more than what we'll see maybe at the national level. Look, this has been Donald Trump's challenge as a candidate, and it still looks, even as I said, he's coming in better shape than ever, like his continued challenge, which is his hard ceiling. Mm-hmm. Even in the swing state polls where he's ahead, he is getting basically the exact same percent of the vote he got in 2020 or he got in 2016. He has never been interested in expanding his coalition. But again, if you're going to win,
but they're trying. This time around, they say they're trying. Well, African American votes.
Yeah, listen.
Well, that's right. It won't be the Haley type voter.
Right.
It'll be a different type voter.
And I think part of Donald Trump's problem is the way he treats Nikki Haley reminds these Haley voters of why they don't like Donald Trump. It's about his character. And that's one of the reasons why she said, listen, it's a time of your choosing, Donald Trump. Are you going to try? Are you going to choose to behave differently going forward? Doubtful.
All right, coming up, despite years of political disagreements and Donald Trump's personal and racist attacks on his wife, Mitch McConnell endorsed Donald Trump today. We have some new reporting about how and why it happened after a quick break.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish. There's been a ton of writing about the album Cowboy Carter since it dropped this spring. But what grabbed my attention is a new documentary on CNN called Call Me Country, Beyoncé and Nashville's Renaissance. Lots of artists have tried to boot scoot their way onto country music charts. Why did this album cause such a stir? And what about both this pop star and this political moment has caused all this conversation? Listen to The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish, on your favorite podcast app.
Today, Senate GOP leader Mitch McConnell endorsed Donald Trump for president, saying in part, "It is abundantly clear that former President Trump has earned the requisite support of the Republican voters to be our nominee for president of the United States." It's the latest turn in the complicated relationship between the two men. They haven't spoken since McConnell publicly blamed Trump for the January 6th insurrection. CNN's Manu Raju joins me now from the Hill. Manu, I mean, you could almost see the imagery of him putting this to paper through gritted teeth. I know you've been doing reporting on this. My understanding is that this came after months of discussions between Josh Holmes, who's a longtime confidant of Mitch McConnell, Chris LaCivita, top Trump aide, and discussing not just their communications, but also, most importantly to Mitch McConnell at this point, how they're going to work together to get Republicans elected to the Senate.
Yeah, and actually, Dana, they still have not spoken despite this endorsement. Remember, the last time that they spoke, McConnell and Trump, was in December of 2020. That's when the Electoral College certified Joe Biden's victory. Mitch McConnell went to the floor, declared Joe Biden the victor. That did not go over well with Donald Trump. Then, of course, January 6th happened. Mitch McConnell voted to acquit Donald Trump in that impeachment trial, but then went to the floor and absolutely eviscerated Donald Trump, calling him morally and practically responsible for the events of that day. And then we have seen everything that happened since then. Trump attacking McConnell, Trump going after Mitch McConnell's wife, Elaine Chao, in really rather racist terms, attacking her. McConnell rarely even says Trump's name. I ask him regularly about Trump, the campaign trail. He doesn't even want to discuss any of it. But he had said for some time that he would ultimately endorse the nominee. And that's what he said in that statement today. I am here to endorse the nominee. Now, Dana, this is not just McConnell falling in line. This is the Republican Party establishment falling line, including McConnell's potential successors, John Thune and John Cornyn. Both of them are running to replace Mitch McConnell in the next Congress. I caught up with both of them today. Both of them had expressed concerns about Trump's viability in the election in the past, about how he can appeal to voters in the suburbs. I asked them if they still have those concerns, and they made clear they're willing to look past them. Are you still concerned about Trump's viability in the suburbs and the impact down ticket as your candidate?
I think we've got going to have a united ticket going into the fall, and we'll go out and all help aggressively win those people in suburban areas, independent voters. It's now it's a straight up one-on-one.
Right. I think President Trump is cleaning Joe Biden's clock as we speak, and I don't see anything changing. Most Democrats are not enthusiastic about Joe Biden's presidency because they realize that he's not the man he once was, and they're concerned about the policies that he's had that have led to things like.
Well, what about this? But not everyone is there in the Senate GOP. Some members still not endorsing Donald Trump. One of them, Senator Todd Young of Indiana, who just told me moments ago he's still where he was, which is not with a Trump endorsement. But nevertheless, you are seeing the party leadership fall in line. And just so remarkable, Dan, about Mitch McConnell, this evolution with Donald Trump, his work with them to confirm those key three Supreme Court justices, the fallout in the aftermath of January 6th, and now the endorsement.
I mean, you could spill so much ink on the relationship, both political and, of course, personal, or lack thereof, between these two men. There's a lot of drama there, many, many subplots. Manu, thank you so much for just bringing us what's most important today, which is falling in line between the behind the presumptive nominee. Appreciate it. And coming up, the Biden campaign acts fast to reach out to Nikki Haley's voters. We're going to give you a live report from the White House and how they are gearing up for this 2020 rematch. Stay with us. The Biden campaign is wasting no time making a direct appeal to Nikki Haley's supporters. She was barely done speaking this morning when a statement hit our inboxes and the president praised her courage in standing up to Trump. CNN's Arlette Saenz is at the White House. So, Arlette, we were talking here earlier in the program about the fact that they were very quick in the Biden campaign. Not only that, they were quick to react to what Donald Trump did as Nikki Haley was speaking in continuing to attack her.
Yeah, Dana, the Biden campaign and President Biden are really trying to use this moment as a way to appeal directly to those Nikki Haley voters. There's a belief within the campaign that they have a lot of room to try to peel off some of those Nikki Haley supporters who are frustrated and turned off by the idea of a second Trump term. The president did this in his statement where he praised Nikki Haley for her ability to call out Trump during the 2024 campaign and also made this direct request to voters saying that there's a place for them in his campaign. The president was also quite explicit in a social media post where he wrote, quote, "You don't have to agree with me on everything to know MAGA extremism is a threat to this country. We need everyone on board. Join our campaign." And if you take a look down there, they specifically highlighted a previous post from the former president where he called Nikki Haley a name, where he said that the people who contribute to her campaign would not be welcome in the MAGA movement. The Biden campaign really believes that there is a possibility, a universe of Haley supporters that they could peel off in November. Also donors who they could try to hit up for more money heading into the 2024 matchup in November. Those donors who might not want to see Trump seeking a second term. And it comes on the heels of those Super Tuesday results. Biden's campaign has long believed that this is the moment that the race will really crystallize in voters' mind between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. In a memo, they painted Trump as a dangerous and unpopular president. And this is also setting up the president's State of the Union tomorrow, making this an even more high-stakes moment as he is preparing to present his vision for a second term and convince voters that he needs another 4 years in office.
Arlette, thank you so much for that reporting. And back here with the panel, Arlette mentioned the State of the Union. I mean, this is a big week. And I don't know, obviously, they couldn't have planned exactly what was going to happen in the Republican primary contest. But the fact that it comes 2 days after Super Tuesday, which ended up being decisive and definitive on the Republican side, does allow for the president to have one of the, if not the biggest audience, right, certainly in an election year, he'll have the convention speech, but the biggest audience each year to try to grasp any voters that he possibly can on the Nikki Haley side. In this case, as we're talking about Republicans, but also about trying to coalesce his own party. And looking at how his campaign, Amy, is kind of preparing their approach for this very long general election, Mike Donilon, who's a very longtime Biden advisor, said the following to Evan Osnos in The New Yorker, talking about the experience of 2020, talking about the soul of the nation. That experience fortified his belief that this year's campaign should center on what he calls the freedom agenda. By November, he predicted, the focus will become overwhelming on democracy. I think the biggest images in people's minds are going to be of January 6th, which gives us a sense of what all the ads are going to look like. But that term, the freedom agenda, I'm talking to sources in the Biden campaign, I'm sure you all are as well, freedom from guns, exactly freedom right. for, exactly right. you know, your reproductive rights, rights, and right. so on and that's so right. forth. I mean, that is, we're going right. to be hearing that a lot.
That's right. And that the other contrast will be Donald Trump's out for himself, Joe Biden is out for you. And so I think you look at both of those things. It's about freedom, it's about choice, and you can fill in what those are going to be. Is January 6th going to be a part of it? Absolutely. But the other piece, and I think the campaign and those around the campaign appreciate and understand this, the issues of the economy right now are significant as well, and that, you know, Trump lost in 2020, despite the fact that he had a slight advantage over Biden on the issue of who do you think will do a better job on the economy. Right now, Trump has something like a 20-point lead on the issue of who do you think will do a better job on the economy. There is a lot of nostalgia for that Trump time about the economy. And I don't think that just talking about freedom is mm-hmm. enough to make those voters who are saying, gosh, I did have more yeah. money in my pocket. I did feel more secure yeah. economically. Is that going to be enough to bring
well,
them
No, it's a great question. You know, what the Democrats and Biden people in particular argue is, well, we thought that about the midterm elections. Are you going to be able to convince them that abortion is really a driving issue when they can't afford groceries? And it turned out in a lot of places the answer was yes. But right.
It's a very different election.
Very different election, and you have different people at the
right.
top of the
exactly.
ticket. Since you're wearing Carolina blue, I'm going to put this.
I just
want to say you are a Dukie, and you're going to maybe lose your Duke card. Yeah, but because you are, let's talk about North Carolina.
Okay. Yeah.
The exit polls there really do tell us a couple of things based on what Arletta is reporting on the very real push that we are already seeing from the Biden campaign to try to take Nikki Haley voters. One question, will you vote GOP regardless of the nominee? Yes, 63%, no, 34%. And of those who said no, 62% went for Nikki Haley.
Yeah, listen, I think in listening to focus groups, there were plenty of Republicans who I heard who were Trump to Biden voters who were also going to vote for Nikki Haley in these primaries. So that is a real universe of voters, and Biden is smart to go after them. If you're thinking about who they are, it's basically sort of suburban women, and what don't they like? They don't like the character issues around Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. These are women who are juggling, you know, raising boys and girls, and they don't like this idea that Donald Trump is as rude and nasty and racist and sexist as he is, right? Calling Nikki Haley bird brain, saying that she was bitter and angry when he really is the bitter and angry one. And so, you know, part of Biden's appeal and part of, I think, his sort of political strength is his just fundamental decency, right? And you see that in some of his statements, right? Basically saying the country has to come together. He does believe that Americans yeah. are sort of better than this MAGA wing.
Let's look at the flip side of that, yeah. though, because another question was, in the exit polls in North Carolina, was your opinion of President Biden. 16%, these are Republican voters, mm-hmm. important to note, 14% approve, and 83% disapprove. And so that kind of begs the question of whether the other side of that coin matches, you know, whether they can actually get the non-Trump voters to cross over potentially if they weren't already Democrat or independent voters and vote for Joe Biden.
Certainly not all of them. And since this is a rematch, a degree to which you can really define one or the other is limited. You can remind them. When I talked to Biden advisors, I said, we're going to remind people what Trump was like. People have a pretty good sense, I think. And so it's not going to work with them all. A lot of this, the burden is on the president himself to just improve his stature. I'm thinking back to a conversation, actually you played it on air yesterday, but with a woman in Charlotte named Susan Van Groningen. Mm-hmm. And Susan told me, she's like, I'll vote for Trump with vomit in my mouth. I said, okay, that's kind of start. She's like, I cannot vote for Joe Biden. And mm-hmm. I said, why not? She said, I don't think he's running the country. Mm. I don't think he's up to running the country. She was there, though, with a friend of hers, Kim Brand, at this Haley rally, who says, I am voting for Joe Biden. I can't vote for Donald Trump. So there are friends and conversations. You know, things happen over the next 8 months that we can't even foresee. Mm-hmm. But I do think the burden on President Trump, which starts tomorrow at the State of the Union, is to show President Biden, to show that he is in command of the presidency.
Yeah.
And he's done that before. So now the task is on him. So I think for a minute, the campaign glow will turn back to the governing glow. And tomorrow, what happens in the chamber, in the House chamber, so, so important.
All right, everybody, coming up, the wild card. We've been talking about Biden versus Trump. There are others who want to be president. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says he's got enough signatures to appear on the ballot in Nevada. That plus other battleground states could change the scope of the presidential race and maybe history.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. Join me, Philip Nguyen, a scholar of Vietnamese-American culture, and the cast and crew as we discuss the making of this historic series. Subscribe now to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts and stream HBO's The Sympathizer starting April 14th exclusively on Max.
Arizona's Republican Senate candidate Carrie Lake spent this morning here in Washington meeting with GOP senators she hopes will be her future colleagues. Her visit comes the day after current Senator Kyrsten Sinema announced that she will not run for re-election. Lake sat down with CNN's Melanie Zanona. So, Melanie, this has become a very different, very important race in Arizona now that the now independent senator has left the building, so to speak. And Carrie Lake is trying to run this race, it sounds like, at least in the short term, differently than she ran the one that she lost for governor of Arizona in 2022.
Yeah, this is going to be one of the most important Senate races in the country because it really could determine who controls the chamber next year. And with Kyrsten Sinema out of the race, it now becomes a two-way contest with a whole pool of moderate and independent voters up for grabs. And Carrie Lake said she recognizes that and that she wants to court all voters, not just the MAGA wing. She's also been here in Washington, as you mentioned, trying to line up endorsements from Senate Republicans, including some members of the establishment wing that she has fought so hard against. And part of her strategy has been trying to tone down her appearance as a MAGA firebrand and also trying to moderate some of her positions on topics like abortion. In the past, she has expressed support for this Arizona law that's from the 1800s that would essentially be a near total ban on abortion. But today, she told me she prefers a 15-week ban in the state. She does not support a federal abortion ban, and she would rather focus on helping mothers and children. Take a listen.
We're going to have 50 different abortion laws. And I think we need to concentrate less because there's going to be so many different abortion laws and more on how do we help women so that they have true options. And I want to do things like a tax credit, a baby bonus, incur a bonus when you get married. Right now we punish people for getting married. We should be encouraging that. Our country is only as strong as our most important institution, which is the family.
Now, at the same time, Carrie Lake also told me that she thinks abortion pills should be illegal, and they account for over half of the abortions in the country. So clearly she's trying to have it both ways, trying to thread a very thin needle on this very tricky issue ahead of November. And meanwhile, her Democratic opponent, Ruben Gallego, already drawing attention to what he calls her, quote, dangerous positions on a number of issues. So just a preview here of the battle to come in November, Dana.
Yeah, and if I just might add, as you know, our colleague Manu Raju talked to her yesterday, and on issues like democracy, she is standing by her false claims that the 2020 election was stolen and is defending her past criticism of a beloved figure in Arizona.
Yeah, and I would point out John she did the McCain. Same thing in this interview.
Okay.
But she also at the same breath said, but I want to focus on the future.
Yeah.
I don't want to look at the past, which is some advice she had been getting from Republicans, including Steve Daines, the chairman of the Senate campaign arm. So
clearly
trying to follow that advice.
I am sure. Thank you so much for that reporting, Melanie. I appreciate it. And ahead, the Robert Kennedy Jr. campaign says he's poised to be on the ballot in Nevada, Arizona and Georgia. What it would mean for Joe Biden and Donald Trump next. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says his campaign has gathered enough signatures in Nevada to qualify for the ballot in that swing state. If that state verifies them, it could reshape the race in yet another battleground. A super PAC supporting him announced last month that it's got enough signatures to secure his ballot access in Arizona and Georgia. Those still need to be verified as well. Our panel is here to discuss. I have to say I'm mildly obsessed with this storyline because it does have the potential to be a an earthquake.
Yeah.
Depending on whether or not he is certified in these states. And let me just kind of give a bigger, more fulsome picture, Nia. In Utah, he's already successfully filed to appear on that ballot. Utah's, I think, a pretty reliably red state. But we'll see. Nevada, New Hampshire, Hawaii, campaign has met the signature threshold to qualify. And as I mentioned, Arizona and Georgia, maybe the sort of mother of all twin swing states, the super PAC met the signature.
Yeah, this threshold could pose a real problem, primarily for Joe Biden. You know, if you start to peel off younger voters, you start to peel off African-American voters, you know, the Kennedy name holds a lot of sway. And listen, some of the things he has done around the climate as well. In terms of Trump, obviously, RFK Jr. is a big anti-vaxxer. That could peel away some Trump voters as well. So it's a mixed bag. I would think it's more dangerous for Joe Biden, given, you know, Kennedy's legacy coming from the Kennedy family, a big Democratic family. It's probably more harmful for Biden than Donald Trump. And I think this is overall a problem for Joe Biden. It's sort of death by a thousand cuts, right? If you look at the way he has to piece together this coalition, a little here, a little there, in terms of losing voters just around the edges in these swing states.
At Kennedy.
Disastrous.
Yeah, a Kennedy family that has almost entirely
distanced
themselves from this bid and supporting Biden. Let's just show our viewers the latest national snapshot of where he stands. Donald Trump, 41, Biden, 48, Kennedy, 13, Amy.
Yeah. And as you said, it's really in these swing states that matter.
Right.
Look, now that the campaign has officially been kicked off, I'm expecting that we're going to see outside groups, let's say, go in and start to define Robert F. Mm-hmm. Kennedy, those on the more liberal side of the equation.
Outside groups who support somebody whose name rhymes with Schmeiden.
Yes, perhaps so. Because nobody really knows much about RFK Jr. He has not been defined at all in this race, and I would expect that to begin in earnest in these states.
And just anecdotally, I bet you guys who've been out on the trail as well have heard this. I mean, New Hampshire, a couple of people said to me, just having regular conversations, who do you support? You know, I'm not sure. I think Kennedy. Why? Well, he's a Kennedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for
sure.
That
was the actual answer.
Right.
So the burden on Democrats is to pull it from a Kennedy to the Kennedy, to who Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is and what he stands for, et cetera. We're about to learn a lot more from that. The Democratic National Committee has a full project on this to put money behind it to influence people. But one other state not on there, I'm told, is also on the verge, is Michigan.
Wow.
And that is something that could be pretty influential. One challenge is on foreign policy, he's not aligned with progressives necessarily. So he fits a lot of different boxes, but that could also be a challenge because he's not a perfect one for the box. But the name in and of itself is a challenge, as all third party candidates are, like Jill Stein, Cornel West.
Yeah. And then we haven't talked about No Labels, which is going to decide apparently by the end of the week, maybe by Friday, whether or not they have the ability, they say, to get on virtually all the ballots. And the question is whether they are going to decide to run a candidate. We're definitely awaiting that. Okay, we're going to just take a moment to go in the Wayback Machine, way back to the fall of 2022, and just remind everybody where Donald Trump's, where he was in the zeitgeist. This is after the midterms did not go well for Republicans, not as well as they had hoped. He had just announced he was running for president. Trump is the Republican Party's biggest loser. Donald Trump is finally finished. Trump voters are done with the ex-president. Republicans blast Trump over dinner with Holocaust denier Nick Fuentes. I am appalled. And he was called an unmitigated disaster. And now, if not the earliest nominee to effectively secure the nomination.
I think you could boil it down to two things happening. One, all of the charges, beginning with Alvin Bragg in Manhattan, that started a chain reaction of other charges. They're all separate, of course, but that really rallied the Republican base. You could see it happening out in Iowa and New Hampshire and other places. That happening at the same time that President Biden's perceived weaknesses grew, and he was no longer so difficult to beat in their eyes. So those things coming together made Donald Trump the darling of the party, and some missteps by some rivals along the way. There's a lot of things in this mix here, but those are a couple reasons.
And in some ways, I think this was always more of a hope of the sort of mainstream media than a reality of the folks on the ground. Trump's chosen candidates in 2022 did not win, but they did pretty good
Although,
in these races.
Yeah, we got to go. But I will say Kristen Holmes was saying the last time she was at Mar-a-Lago before last night was in 2022 when he was announcing, and it was pretty depressing. People didn't think it was a real thing, and here we are. Thank you all so much. Thank you for joining Inside Politics. CNN News Central starts after the break.
When you work next level. When you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.